Prologue, London, England, February 2004. The food of love isn't music. It's grilled cheese and tomato sandwiches. As the waiter set the plate down in front of me, I could see that the tomato had sunk down into the cheese, creating an edible sculpture in the shape of a heart. It seemed appropriate for the occasion. Outside, it was the sort of crispy, clear winter day that you get occasionally, even in England. Beautiful and sunny, without a hint of a cloud. It was the season of white-lace doilies and heart-shaped boxes of chocolates and teddy bears that squawked mawkish sentiments when you pressed their distended tummies. In other words, it was almost Valentine's Day, and I had decided to do a little matchmaking of my own. Why should Cupid have all the fun? My boyfriend's sister was desperately in need of a romantic intervention. Boyfriend. It still boggled my mind that I had one. I was very aware of Colin's arm draped casually over the back of my chair, as though it had always belonged there. It gave me a weird little thrill to realize that we were the established couple here, beaming benevolently upon the singles. It was hard to remember that a mere 3 months ago, both my personal and professional life had been scraping rock bottom. Like many a historian before me, I had come to England on academic pilgrimage, worshipping at that altar of scholarship, the British Library, with its multitudinous manuscript collections, in the hopes that the great God of the archives would prove merciful and shower footnotes down upon me. Surely, I had thought, with all the boundless optimism of the fourth-year graduate student, the mere fact that scholars had been through those documents time and again didn't necessarily mean that I wouldn't find anything new. Those scholars hadn't been me. Which, in retrospect, probably meant that they were better qualified, but that only occurred to me once it was already too late to turn back. I should have known something was wrong when my advisor's parting words were, "Good luck." To his credit, he had very gently suggested that I might want to consider a different sort of topic. But I didn't want to consider another topic. I was madly in love with my topic. Aristocratic espionage during the wars with France, 1789 to 1815. It had dash, it had swash, it had buckle. It also had no primary sources. My life would have been much easier had I followed my advisor's suggestion and looked more closely into the careers of those men who spied for England under government auspices, and thus might reasonably be expected to show up in government dispatches and payrolls. That was far too easy. What I intended to unravel were the networks of independent adventurers, those daring souls who had struck out on their own for king and country, using their family connections and the benefit of independent income to create elaborate bouquets of flower-named spies. The League of the Scarlet Pimpernel, the League of the Purple Gentian, and finally, the most intriguing of them all, the League of the Pink Carnation. You can see where this is going, can't you? I had arrived in London in September. By November, my fingernails were all gone, chewed to the quick. I had no footnotes. I had no dissertation. I was stranded in a country where the sun sets at 4, and I was never, ever going to get an academic job, much less a tenure-track one. They always say execution clarifies the mind wonderfully. So does the prospect of law school. I made one last desperate attempt. I sent out letters to all the known descendants of the Purple Gentian and the Scarlet Pimpernel, politely asking if I might please, pretty, pretty please, have access to any family papers they didn't mind showing to a humble little Harvard student. Have I mentioned that Colin is a direct descendant of Lord Richard Selwick, also known as the Purple Gentian? 3 months later, I was still reeling over my good fortune. I had enough footnotes to make my advisor's eyes go pop. I had been given access to archival material the likes of which I had never dared to dream existed. And I was dating someone who could make my heart do a little tap dance simply by showing up in the room. I was so happy, it was scary. Oh, I still suffered from the usual slings and arrows to which flesh is heir, like the tube breaking.